Catch it.
I can't. Catch it. It's too much effort. Hi, and welcome to another episode of Dungeons & Degrees. My name's Adrian.
And I'm Alex.
And today we have a returning guest, Mason! Introduce yourself again!
What a pleasure, everybody. My name is Mason, though many a person calls me Professor D&D. And it is truly a pleasure to be back here. For those of you who don't know me, I make, with increasingly decreasing frequency, D&D content on TikTok. And then with increasing frequency, D&D supplements elsewhere. So that's the deal. That's the scoop. That's where I'm at.
So are you telling me that you have another thing in the works at this time?
I have a few things in the works. I was asked to contribute to to a book of religious orders for Faerun, which I don't believe that is any kind of secret. I believe I can talk about that freely and openly. It is not yet published, but we're getting there. We're working toward it. Made a ranger subclass for it. Compiled information about a religious order that's already out there that I think is interesting. That was basically all of my work for that. Then I also got brought on to the Blind GM's D&D TikTok source book. Again, I got brought on to that months ago. I believe this is also okay for me to discuss. Nobody's asked me to sign any kind of NDAs. And nothing that I'm spilling here is the intellectual property of anybody, I believe, except for my own. So for that, I made another new class, which is still being tested a bit. But it is called The Tethered, and the goal is to basically make an anime protagonist who is also a tank spellcaster that doesn't have spell slots, but instead gets spells the more that they take hits. That's basically the core premise of that. And then last but not least, project number 3. This is the one that has the least amount of work done. Basically everything else has been taken care of. But project number 3 is a new one. So I'm not going to say too much, but I am one of the lead designers on this project, and it is a setting book. The working title is Dead Gods and Dust, and I'm not going to say much about it, except that people should expect a new setting that is 5th edition rules compatible, along with, I believe, 2 new classes and 2 new subclasses for each class that currently exists. Along with, you know, all the monsters, all the spells, all the magical items.
Is that 6 new classes from your beautiful brain? Is that what I just calculated?
In total, once that book is out, that will be 6 new classes. I will not take sole credit for the 2 from Dead Gods and Dust because I am expecting that my collaborators probably are going to be contributing quite a bit there. But yeah, that'll be 6 that I have either solely created or have had a formative contributing role to. So, yeah.
Do you feel like creating classes at this point in your beautiful career, which is, may we remind our dear listener, not your full-time job?
Indeed not.
Right? This is like the side hustle.
Yep.
So your big, beautiful brain not only has to work that whatever 40 hours... You were just this brilliant. Think about this. Listen, dear listener, you need a man who creates a class and just like keeps doing it. Let him quit his job and let him just create classes. And look, then we can get a whole different game system. And then maybe
It's fine.
Who knows?
That's my contribution.
Thank you, Adrian.
Thank you, Adrian.
But no, do you feel like it's getting easier at this point, like creating all of your classes?
Yeah, I do. I do think it is. I don't know if I necessarily have a method. I think my method is pretty loose, but I think I do maybe have a method at this point, which is very informed by, I think I plugged this crew last time, and I'm going to do so again, and I basically do so anytime I talk about game design in the D&D space, but MCDM Productions and their leader over there, Matt Colville, I think have a really formative role in kind of helping me figure out my approach to designing classes. They talk a lot about the core narratives of game design, right? Like finding what the central story for a monster or a magic item is, and then creating mechanics that facilitate the dramatic moments of that narrative, if that makes sense. So an example from MCDM's side of things, they made a class. I have no affiliation with them. Just want to say really quick, I'm just a huge fan. They made a class called the Beast Heart, which is basically the Beastmaster Ranger, but just make the relationship between the animal and the trainer just the whole core of the class. Also, instead of having it be like, oh, I have a hawk, instead it's like, oh, I have a hellhound, or oh, I have a ooze that is my thing, or oh, I have a boulette. So a lot more kind of like monster trainer type thing. But the core mechanic of that class is ferocity, which basically the more that your monster is in the thick of it, the more that they're surrounded by enemies, the more ferocious they become, and the more ferocious they become, the stronger they become. But also, the more ferocious they become, the harder they are to control. So it kind of creates this lovely, simmering little mechanical tension that really does a good job of showcasing the drama of the class's narrative. So I think that kind of has informed a lot of my design. What is the drama? What is the story we want to tell here? And what kind of mechanic can I make to get that done? Anyway, now that I've ranted, there's the answer.
No, and I think that makes a whole sense, because like that's literally tabletop role playing, right? What is the main point? And then breaking it down backwards from there, right? I want this kind of relationship, which then gives you that separate flavor of different classes. So then you could do something slightly different. So you could take inspiration from something, and it's okay. You don't have to completely make up the whole entire wheel, because what is fantasy if not just rinse and repeating a whole bunch of stuff? And, you know, any sort of mythos, it's all the same thing, just in different flavors, right? How was the world created? Here's how we think it was created. And we don't yell at anybody for having different mythos, but I think that's very interesting. Like starting from that interesting concept and then moving and making it more impactful as a like storyteller.
Yeah. 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 If the most interesting part of your class has no structure by with to mess with the structure of everything around it, then you have mechanically sent the message that it's not actually the most interesting part of your class, which I think is why maybe people struggle a little bit with the Ranger, because it has a lot of pseudo structure built to work with exploration, but then there is no exploration system in fifth edition. So
that makes sense, because the most fun to play is when you mess up. It's never, I'm doing perfectly, everything's fine. That doesn't tell a story.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
Adrian?
When am I going to play these classes?
It's a great question.
Because I got a sneak peek of the first go around, and then after it came out, I still got to play another class. So it's just been a joy to be playing these new creations. Because, you know, I as a GM, I've played most classes already, or I've looked at them and to make sure, hey, what's going to mess with my monsters, and what should I be looking out for? You know, how can I actually use one of these classes against my players? It's very, very fun. So having another perspective, another set of rules to look at is very, very fun.
Yeah, well, the tethered, we can probably actually, I can probably give you that toy sooner rather than later, Adrian.
Yes.
The two others, the Dead Gods and Dust project, still remains pretty in the early phases at this point. So I don't have much for you to play with yet. But the tethered, Tethered should be available shortly for some playing around.
Nice. And I think the only other thing I haven't played is the Commander yet. At least, you know, I've looked it over. I've played with individuals that were using that class. So I still need a third stream, you know?
Sure. I'll get right on that.
I do have questions for both of y'all.
Yes.
Okay. I guess we'll start with Mason because he's the guest and we like him, right? Oh, want him to sure. be showcased. How do you go about looking for people to play test? Like, is there once again a method? Do you just call it to the wind? What are you looking for your testers to what are they doing? What do they want? What do you want from them?
That is a really good question. I would say from different play testers, I want different things. I have a little play testing Discord server that I have a lot of players on. And I would say one of the goals there was to have a variety of player types. I have a handful of players that are a little min-maxy, a little bit more in the mechanics. And then I have some other players that are very much just kind of like the classic 5th edition player who's just kind of there to have fun, just kind of there to play their character and have a good time. And I think all of that's good because the min-maxers help me make sure that nothing's broken, and they catch me when I trip, which is good. I need that. But then the kind of more casual players also help me maybe catch when the average consumer might be less than interested in what I'm making, and kind of help me figure out how to enhance that, how to soup that up, how to make that more flashy, more fun. Things like that. So kind of a diversity of play styles is what I'm shooting for.
And then Adrian, what do you look to do when you're play testing? As a play tester, what are you looking at doing?
Oh, I'm here to have fun, dude. Listen, my needs are very easily met. It's not like I had a lot of chances to play test things, but I try and see how things work out. But other than that, man, I haven't made anything yet. I just got a lot of writings on the walls and that's it.
Well, no, I'm at, like, for you, because you just said you playtest it for Mason. Like, what are you as a playtester?
Mostly just to see if there's anything broken. I mean, you know, there's nothing that stood out when I... Because, like, I feel like it was already pretty run through by the time I even had the chance to take it for a role, that if anything had happened. I don't know if this, because like for the most part when I do things, it's for flavor. If I'm looking for certain abilities, certain subclasses, what story am I able to kind of tell, and can I tell it well with what I have with this class? And like, can I envision this character that, like, once I figure out what the class is, can I envision my character in the next parts? Like, which abilities can I select, or which subclasses am I going to choose? Like, can I envision them doing this thing or them being this person? Like, I think for the lesser lycanthrope, the ooblegs, like, I couldn't see my character at that time to be like these other things, these half monster, half man, or whatever it may be. Man being a very general term. Yeah. And the historian, like a fated like monster hunter. Think of what is that guy's name? Like a Van Helsing. Like oh, their family's always gonna be fighting monsters. Like, this is what they learned. This is their book. This is the thing. Like, I could see that. I was like, I was into this. You know, that's how I start selecting and choosing a character. And if there's something broken, I might see something. I've seen it before with when my friends tried to do a magic item on a whim. And I totally ruined it for the player, but I told the DM, like, oh, wow, that's, like, just a free counter spell, like, and then a release. That's amazing. And then they're like, yeah, it is. Hold up a bit. And then I'm like, oh, man. And this is directly speaking at Lindsay and Justin's payment through magic items. I totally destroyed the payment.
You did.
So I usually can see things when things are going to be broken. But also I have other players that do that for me in my game that'll tell me straight up what's what. Because they're min-maxers.
You gotta love them. People get mad at them, but those guys, they make sure the Titanic sails right, you know?
Right. They're like, yeah, we could take an iceberg. No,
yeah,
we couldn't.
Yeah, he says about a ship that crashed and also had no sails. None of that was
accurate.
You know
what? The Titanic did sail right, though.
Yeah, it was going there for a bit and then just didn't.
Yeah. I also must say really quick, Adrian, I was super happy that you picked the Lineage of Hunters as your subclass, because that was the one that had been touched the least by playtesters. And so when I was like, we're going to get this run on a stream, yes, that is good, because then if any problems come up in stream, that will be, I have a video record, right, of things going wrong. So
right.
with the class. So I was super happy about that.
For these streams, is it just like anybody and everybody, you're just like, hey man, you're cool, I want you to test this out, like, is that how you do your selection pretty much for these streams?
It is. I think it's a little bit more varied than that. Usually, I mean, like, someone having expressed interest in the stream is like a big thing that pulls attention for sure. But also, both of the streams that I've run so far took place kind of right around the time of the release. And so I also kind of wanted people playing that maybe had other connections in the community besides just the ones that I already have, maybe also have followers that I don't have, so that, you know, if the random follower decides, hey, I'll tune into this stream, maybe the book and the classes can reach more people than they could otherwise. Also, one thing that I've tried, I think maybe with varying success, to do, because I've seen a lot of discourse on social media regarding there really being no good excuse in the year of our universe 2022 for there to be an all white, all dude stream. Like, there are so many people in the hobby from so many different backgrounds, representing a variety of genders and sexual proclivities. Another table of just cis straight dudes probably doesn't have to be, right? Like, you can find other people. So that was another thing, was I did try to maybe also kind of bring together people from a variety of ethnicities and backgrounds to hopefully make it so that, yeah, for sure, this stream is about, we're playing my classes during this stream, but also hopefully some of my viewers will see these content creators and see these creatives in the space, and maybe we'll be turned on to them instead of just sticking with me. I might be hardworking, but I am also yet another in a very long line of just white guys playing D&D. And if I can use what very, very limited platform I have to maybe broaden people's horizons, that's great. So that has been another focus as well, which is, I will say, why on a number of different occasions I have gotten VJ Harris in the streams when I can. He does just such amazing work, and I think is one of the front runners in, specifically in 5e design spaces, and is also, you know, a black trans man, and as a result brings in a lot of perspective that I don't have. Should VJ hear this, he will probably blush quite a bit, because he that's the way that he reacts to being complimented. I also hope that should he hear this, he will be appreciative. I feel on some level like I've been the town crier for VJ, and I hope that it's never been excessive for VJ. So, yeah. Yeah.
I'll let VJ know next week when we have him on.
Great. Sounds good. Please do.
What have you kind of learned from your release? And is there anything that you wish you'd done differently or that you know now for the future?
That is an excellent question. So one thing that I will say is that the overwhelming lion's share of work on the Professor's Comprehensive Collection of Character Classes took place before the recent debacle and the resulting conversation surrounding Spelljammer, right? The conversation that came around Spelljammer, which I think was a really important conversation. And in the aftermath of that and in the conversation of that, I had been aware of kind of the perpetual mishandling by Wizard of the Coast of orcs and of certain racial backgrounds in 5th edition, and also just kind of historically on through the years. I had been aware of that, but also had, as the uninformed little rube that I am, also been hopeful after Tasha's, and also seeing work like VJ's in the space that kind of like redesigns and takes a new approach on race and heritage and upbringing in 5th edition. So with all of that, I'd been kind of maybe optimistic. And then Spelljammer happened. So that was also when I heard about the whole like Mike Merles debacle that happened years ago, which I believe happened before I was even in the hobby. And I, having not educated myself, was unaware of that until this all happened. So kind of found out a whole bunch of stuff. And a lot of people, I think very understandably, just kind of departed from 5th edition. I think maybe the most unfortunate aspect of my own lack of education on this is that in the midst of all of this, I had also decided to use DM's Guild as the platform on which I would be self-publishing this book. The reason that that's regrettable is because DM's Guild is the singular platform on the internet for self-publishing TTRPG games, where Wizards of the Coast gets a cut of your profits. And so here were these friends of mine separating themselves from this particular company for what I feel are very reasonable and ethical reasons. And I then found myself, because of my lack of education, basically kind of being like, hey, but what if you kind of gave them a little bit more of your money so that you can also buy my book, right? So I would say maybe that was an aspect of all of this that I had not even thought of. I had foolishly not even thought of kind of like maybe the ethics of production in my little side project. So I think that's maybe been the biggest learning curve in the middle of it all. And it's something that I'm still trying to figure out, because the two projects, the Religious Orders and the Sourcebook, I had signed on to those prior to kind of all of this as well, and also had contributed basically all of my work before this as well. But now with this new kind of like Dead Gods and Dust project, and also with future projects, I kind of find myself in a situation where I'm still kind of asking, like, is there a way for me to kind of like ethically be a creator with this game, despite the problematic stuff? Just kind of that whole debacle has been a real learning curve for me that I don't think I have the answers to.
This is just kind of like an ongoing thing for sure, and still kind of going through the process. I feel like the Hodozi thing, even though it feels like so long ago, because time is ridiculously long and short at the same time, and that we still have to learn all these things and make sure things are good. Like, how many times a year Are we going to have some sort of quote-unquote freckled hobo thing or some sort of other TTRPG mess and so much drama? It seems like the things we're learning about people who just don't understand what's going on in the world versus the people who are, like, running the show not getting, hey, this might be a little racist. And by a little, I mean a lot. it's just ridiculous. And to put all your effort in, hey, Alex and Mason, stop me if I don't make any sense. To put your effort in and just having to, like, okay, well, now where? I thought I found, like, a place where I could start, like, pushing this material. And, you know, if you're a bigger creator, oh, I could just self-publish and just, like, you know, sell the PDF from, like, a website. But, like, then how do I get the clicks? How do I get the circulation? It becomes a whole other ordeal, because, like, you want some sort of understanding that your work's being seen, not just by your friends, because, like, you know, your friends, you know, they love you, they're gonna support you. You know, who's doing it for the friendship, or who's really, like, you know, I don't know if I like this, you know, or who's being straight up. That's what I'm trying to say. So yeah, I think it's very difficult things to be had at right now.
Yeah. Well, if you're balancing, like, what the fuck? Like, how many is two times too many of an apology? How many is two times too many? Oh, we'll do better in the future. You know, I think it's an interesting point where we live in a society where cancel culture is prevalent. And we are so happy to, like, individually just cut people out of society. Like, not completely right, but like, enough. But when it comes to companies, there are too many fingers to point around, and they do provide a good service as a jumping off point. We talked about it last episode, where 5e material is readily available. It's easy to find Dungeons and Dragons things online for free. It's very easy. But it's very difficult to financially support smaller indie creators if you're on a limited budget. Because then you're trusting that the material is good. You're trusting that, you know, people have an interest in it. But we already know people like Dungeons and Dragons because it's here. We know 5e is easy to play because there's been countless numbers of hours played on it. So something like, you know, what Mason is creating absolutely would be an easier, safe bet, where I am supporting somebody who is a smaller creator in a version of a tabletop RPG that is easier to find. But then, like, Mason's doing a great job and really trying to put in the work and working with creators who are not cis white men. Where's that balance? And is there an appropriate way to find it? Is this is the work that we're constantly doing? And then, humans are weird, bro.
Yeah, it's all messy. It's all messy, right? I think we're not as good oftentimes at speaking with our dollars. And I say that as someone that is trying and probably not always succeeding to do better at that. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. So I would say that's kind of been the biggest learning curve, which might be a bit of a downer, and apologies to anyone if it is. But yeah, that's been the biggest hurdle. And it's been a little bit frustrating, but also at the same time, like, I can only imagine how frustrating I'm, again, back to it, right? I'm the white guy in the room. And so, all things considered, the, like, frustration and difficulty experienced on my end of things significantly less than many others. So yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it's all weird. It's all weird. But I would say that's been the biggest learning curve. I went with the DMs Guild because it was the kind of easiest and the most accessible. And I had already put in so much work, was kind of where my mind was at, right? Where it was like, let's just get this out there into the world. And it's been a real learning experience about, like, if it's the easiest and the most accessible and the most financially established, that oftentimes will also mean that company or corporation or group very well might have kind of stepped on people to get there. And so maybe take a second look at the easy stuff has kind of been a bit of a takeaway, I think.
Ah, the Amazon debacle, if you will.
An excellent example. Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, that makes sense. For your future creations, have you considered any other systems? Because, like, I feel like since that happened with the whole Hodozi thing, people have been starting to go to Beggar Talk, you know, looking at other things. Is there any system that you've been looking at that you find interesting and might create for that system as well?
I actually didn't realize this, but I'd paid for a Humble Bundle way back when. And so as a result of that, I have, like, basically all of the Pathfinder books, which I didn't realize. Yeah. So that was the
first. Just, like, you just see them and you're just like, I guess I'll get it. I don't know.
It's there. I do also have the beginner box that they have, which is, I will say, way nicer than the fifth edition beginner box. Like, just production wise, the stuff in there is so great. And you also get, like, a ton of little cardboard minis for, like, a bunch of pre-made heroes. Also a bunch of cardboard minis for a bunch of, like, other heroes besides the pre-made ones in case you decide to make your own. And then a bunch of cardboard minis for all the monsters that are in the, like, rule books that are in the beginner box. So it's got so much, really such a beautiful little box and relatively affordable in my opinion as well for what you're getting. But all of this is a circuitous way for me to say the classes in Pathfinder, I don't think quite speak to me the same way that fifth edition classes do. So I think I might play more Pathfinder, but I don't know if I'm going to design very much Pathfinder second edition stuff. The stuff that maybe has been catching my eye a little more are Forged in the Dark games, which I don't know if our listeners have heard of before.
Do tell them, and not just me either.
I will gladly tell the listener and the listener only, Adrian. But yeah, Forged in the Dark is kind of a small family of tabletop role-playing games that originated with Blades in the Dark and has since expanded to include other games such as Band of Blades, Scum and Villainy, and other similar games of the sort. I believe there's a fourth that I'm forgetting at the moment. But Blades in the Dark is a kind of, I think the cool thing and also the challenging thing as a designer for Forged in the Dark games is that they are kind of made to tell one story and to tell that one story really well, which I think is great, right? Like, I think systems that are made to do that oftentimes do what they're aiming for better than maybe anything else could. But on the flippity flip, if you're not interested in whatever they're doing for the moment, that's kind of tough, right? But for example, Band of Blades, well, Blades in the Dark, the first one is basically kind of you're all members of a gang. You're the leaders of a gang rising in a haunted kind of Victorian steampunk city, which is pretty cool. And you go between, there are kind of two phases of play, the one being the planning phase or the downtime phase, and the other one being the job phase or the heist phase. And the two kind of different phases play pretty differently, but impact one another in very important ways. Band of Blades has some similar aesthetics. A pretty central thing for Blades in the Dark and Band of Blades and just kind of all Forged in the Dark games is kind of the dual cycle nature where it's like you got the one half of the game and then you got the other half of the game. But then also both of those, all of these games make it possible for you to avoid negative consequences, but at the cost of stress. And so the further your character goes, kind of the further into the abyss their psyche goes as well. And so a lot of these games kind of focus on juggling that aspect, right? Like, kind of your character gets exposed to more and more psychologically taxing stuff. And then you in the other phase of the game have to figure out how to mitigate that a little bit, which is fun and interesting and enjoyable, I think. I think there are probably more really cool kinds of stories that could be told with the Forged in the Dark central engine that haven't yet been. But also, the kind of other end of things is the challenge with designing an indie TTRPG games is they don't get as much foot traffic, right?
Right.
And so, particularly in the case of like designing something for Forged in the Dark, if I were to design an entire kind of hack of the system, I would be doing significantly more work than I've ever done for fifth edition, probably for significantly less as far as financial return is concerned. And so then there's, you know, the whole debacle of ethics versus financial reward. And as Alex stated earlier, this isn't my full-time job. So I probably am in a privileged enough place where that's not the biggest deal. I'm not going to starve, but also kind of a bummer.
Yeah.
But I mean, life's full of bummers. So
even though it's a bummer, I do want to say, you know, congrats on making silver. I know it's, you know, even with this thing, you still did it, had an achievement in Gone Silver, which is what, 100 copies or something, or how much is it?
Yeah, once you break 101 copies, you hit silver.
Gotcha. There you go.
I think they missed it. It should have been a Dalmatian. Like, it, like 101 copies should be like the Dalmatian award.
It really should be. It really should be. Yet another way that Wizards of the Coast is letting us down. But thanks, Adrian. I really appreciate it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And many, many thanks to the many, many people who helped it get to that point, right? I did not buy those 101 copies. Thank you to everybody that did. Truly very kind. And I do hope that the work, everyone has said that it has so far, which is very nice to hear. But nonetheless, I will say it again. I hope that the work that went into the book shows. I hope that the classes are as enjoyable to play for you as they were for me to design.
Yeah, even though I got like a kind of a preliminary one for the one shots we did, I still want to support you, and I bought one. I put in a little review because even after that, I was like, I bought it, and then I'm like, you have to wait a day, and I'm like, I've already got this. Whatever, man. You don't know who I'm at. Don't tell me what to do. I've already played this. I know it's good.
They really do gatekeep those reviews. They really do. They're like, careful, careful. Don't speak about something until it's been a full day. Careful.
Yeah. You have to buy it, but I already have. Whatever, I'll buy it again. Fine. You just can't flood it with reviews from people who haven't bought it. Whatever.
Yeah.
I get what you're doing, but fuck you, man.
I just want to help support my friend.
Yeah. Isn't
How
that
do you
enough?
Know I didn't steal it?
Yeah. 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 I think maybe also kind of to go back to an earlier question, another thing that I've learned a little bit, I think, which I think maybe I learned kind of during the final stretch of production for the book, maybe even before release, this kind of hit. But nonetheless, I've kind of sat and stewed in it a little bit. I think there's stuff that we as creators, both in this space and in others, do. It's kind of just for us. It's kind of the little icing on the cake just for us and maybe not as much for the consumer. The example of that in this particular case for me is there are three short stories at the end of the professor's comprehensive collection of character classes. One of each is from each of the kind of different classes' perspective. And I put that in there being like, this is going to be like a nice little extra thing that most books in DM's Guild will never do. And as far as I can tell, I don't know. I think basically no one read it, which is okay. And when we were approaching publication, I thought to myself, as I was speaking to kind of, I had brought on an editor and brought on a layout guy to kind of help make it as professional as it could be. And as we were kind of approaching the end, the three of us, I was like, oh yeah, people aren't going to really touch this, are they? The people are going to read the classes. They're going to love the classes. They're going to play the classes. And frankly, D&D books in particular have trained us to do that and only that, because everything else is arduous, like academic labor, right? And so I was like, no one else is going to read this. But that's okay, because I like it. And so I'm going to put it in here because I like it, and it doesn't matter if no one else reads it. Like, that was kind of like a place that I arrived at. And I think that's something that I'm going to keep in mind going forward on other projects. I will kind of continue, I think, to probably give myself those little creative gifts, even if none of the buyers want it.
All right. I mean, what? It might not be what you signed up for, but it's still a nice little treat of creative candy, I guess. Yeah, at the very end. Because, like, I mean, even with all the numbers, like, for me as an individual who just reads what I need to read and gets going, like, it happens. But there is, like, a few books that I've seen in the past, like Shadowrun 5th Edition, where between each chapter there's, like, a little blurb, a little story, and it kind of gets you in the feel of them. So, like, I totally get it. And, you know, when you said that, I'm like, that's kind of cool. But, yeah, no. I mean, I got the thing. Now I'm going to go read it. I mean, I used it for the classes, so, but now I know the secret.
Yeah, but think about, like, that is, like, a way to change the scenery that is Dungeons & Dragons, right? That is a good way to either just make it your own and make it that much more special. Because I think for me to consume something, if I saw that little extra effort, and that may be the, like, Disney training I have in my back, like, I like that extra step forward. Like, that shows me that it's not just an algorithm that's creating these. It's not just somebody who's there to hustle for the money. It's, like, another level of a fan being able to share their joy and love to another fan. So, like, keep doing it, because that's magic. And, you know, being creative is hard, and if you've got those skills, like, show them off.
Yeah, I'll definitely keep going for it going forward. Absolutely. Thank you both for the encouragement. And I do, thanks for also mentioning the Shadowrun one as well, Adrian, because I think that also might be a good point, and kind of something that I thought about afterward was, I could have maybe put those short stories right before each class. Like, each class gets the short story before the class. And then maybe people, like, it would have been a story that kind of goes through the whole book instead of being this kind of appendix at the end. So I think maybe that's also, like, a little bit of learning. But regardless, even if no one, kind of what I guess I'm trying to say is that was something that I learned about myself, is that even if no one reads that little flavor text at the end, I like it a lot. So I'm going to keep doing it. And I don't think, I also don't think that I'm alone on that, right? Like, if you talk to artists of all kinds, whether it's painters, digital visual artists, musicians, things like that, I think all the time you will hear kind of people within those spaces say that have their little things that they love that make it into their art, even though I, the uneducated consumer, have no idea is there. They still just plant that little seed just because it makes their heart warm, right? So it was nice to kind of maybe get to participate in that kind of, like, artistic aspect in this particular medium in my own little way.
I need more people to be educated. That's it. It's my
hurry up and teach them, Alex.
Yeah, come on. Isn't that, like, your job or something, to teach the world?
You're so right.
if the struggle this week wasn't trying to get students to just take time to make something look nice, I think we'd be in a different, it's weird. It's very interesting to see, like,
the immediate consumerism that affects children, and how our world really, really plays a big part in how they perceive themselves, especially when it's something creative and something that you know has to take time. There's no way around being creative and not taking time. That you, I just don't see a way that you can either, because you're perfecting a craft, and that, like, part of that is years, right? So, okay. There's no understanding of that if there's no creativity practice in your life. So if you don't have parents or you don't have family that are creative, then you forget and you don't see that, like, this all takes time. And, like, I didn't have parents that were super creative. So I was like, oh, well, obviously I can't be creative. Like, I can't do these things, or I can do them at, like, a lower level. I'm not doing it at a professional level. But if you have people who understand that things take time, which is who nowadays, you're just not creative, or you just don't appreciate it.
Yeah. Yeah. Which then gets into all the kind of, like, what was it? There is an essay, I believe it's an essay, it might be a speech, called The Room of My Own, that is written by a female writer, I want to say in the 19th century. I'm entirely forgetting her name, which is truly shameful. I went to college for English literature. I should remember this. Why do I remember the name Rudyard Kipling and not the name of this very important woman? But Virginia nonetheless.
Wolf. Thank you, Google.
Is it? Did you Google it?
A Room of One's Own?
A Room of One's Own. Yeah, that's it.
Yeah,
that's
this is it. Virginia Woolf. Virginia Woolf.
And one of the, like, most formidable, most important women writers of all time. Holy cow.
That's probably one for your teachers to take back that diploma that you have.
No. Yeah, yeah, they should steal it away. And good luck to them while they're at it.
If that was the case, I would have been taking it back, because I have so much mental illness, okay? Like, I got my psychology degree, okay?
No.
This doesn't mean I undo the mental illness.
The mental illness is why you have a psychology degree. That is the prerequisite.
It comes with the diploma. Yeah.
Yeah. They knew, because same thing. We have it in this whole household has the psychology degrees, and we're riddled with interesting choices our brains make.
Yep. It's the way it goes.
Riddles with the mind sads.
All the mind sads. Sorry, but to the point with Virginia Woolf, Room of One's Own, the point there is basically Virginia Woolf says, like, I've gotten to write a lot because I've had the funds. I've had the finances. I've had the financial security that affords me the time. And kind of talks a bit about how, like, a lot of the time the art that reaches us or the art that we are told is prestigious oftentimes can only come from, like, wealthier circles, because the wealthier circles have the financial backing that affords them the time necessary and affords them the teaching necessary and things to that effect as well. I guess all of that is to say, like, it's a freaking crying shame, because there's probably amazing stuff being designed by other people within this exact space, but they maybe don't have the time, maybe don't have the money. So, yeah.
Abolish our capitalistic society. Take away the working requirement to live and survive. Free food for everybody, free housing for everybody, and let's just see where that goes. Like, just, like, where does that take us?
Let's just roll the dice. Because I'm tired of this roll. This roll, this sucks. Roll again. Let's try again. Let's do something
else. We talk
about
it a lot, because, like, I have a hetero-presenting relationship, and so a lot of the conversation, when we first started Well, when we were first married, because there was no dating. Like, let's just, we just got married.
That's just true.
Straight in. It was like 2 months, and then we just like got married, right?
Hot but Michael, dang.
Listen.
Fucking wild.
Hey, no. I'm saying hot dang as in like congrats, you're still married, right?
Yeah,
like,
yeah. No, it's been a lot. You, listen, right? I don't know if I'd suggest it for everybody. Maybe talk to them about like gender norms. Because that was one of the big conversations. Sure. Was like who is doing what in the relationship. And for the majority of our time together, I have been the main breadwinner, which is very interesting to process with somebody who was raised in a Christian West Texas small town. The sure. man should be the man, and then being like, but like that doesn't work for us, or like that's not where we both succeed. Because I think even if the roles were switched and I didn't necessarily have to work, I think I would still end up working. So here's my, this is the backing to my proposal, that we don't work to feed or clothe or live. I would still just work to like help teach the youth. I would still do what I'm doing, even if my life didn't depend on the financial part of it. Cautiously optimistic.
The pursuit of fulfilling labor, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a good tagline.
It's what a lot of us are after. The pursuit of fulfilling labor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm unemployed.
This was the perfect time. This was the perfect time. I'm employed, but desperately seeking other employment. That's me.
Yeah, well, I'm working on it. Not really. I'm working on it, sorta. Sure. I'm pursuing stuff. I gave myself a safety cushion. I'm fine. I'm working on other projects that potentially, it's not an income per se, but it's gonna come back eventually, right? Here's hoping. Sure. Fingers crossed. All that stuff.
This is how we promote the Patreon. At this point, it's keep Adrian afloat.
Hey, I can do a lot with $10 now that I have time. Now I only have time to stretch it. So yeah, subscribe.
Dear listener.
Feed me.
Rice. Dear listener, do you care about the common man? Is feeding the hungry something that you find ethically motivating? Then back this Patreon.
It's just me. In the arms of I don't want to get copyrighted.
I think Sarah's got other things to do. Full circle. I think she's got other things.
Yeah,
I would hope. If she doesn't, what is she, like, what's the point?
What is that? A small-time D&D not really kind of podcast says using my song?
Get him.
Get him!
Get him.
Get him!
You want all my negative debt? You can have it. I don't care.
Oh, son of a... dear listener, please don't forget to file your public servant loan forgiveness if you haven't. Although I'm pretty sure by the time this posts, it's been far too late. I actually think
that
needs to be a thing.
Or you're a public servant. No, this I need.
I'm
to
a public
be,
servant. I've been for so long.
I used to be. Now I'm just a private servant for myself. That's just called being by yourself.
That's just called survival.
Yeah. All right. We've hit the hour mark. Do we have any last questions?
Who does your hair, Mason? Who does it?
Me, most days. I do go to a barber shop. I'm not going to say the name
maybe,
of it.
Maybe not that one.
To dox you.
I've accidentally doxed myself before, and I'm just out here trying not to do it again. But I will say this. The first time I went into that barber shop, when they all found out that I had already written books, they all immediately started telling me their life stories in the pursuit of getting me to write their biographies, One of them was like a former WWE fighter who was just like the biggest, most roided out man with a fully tattooed bald head. Just like a wild guy. And then the other one had been shot 9 times and was working as a barber to like put his daughter through like this gymnastics class that was going to make it so that she could compete in the Olympics. Wild. They do such a good job with haircuts. They are also the weirdest people. So it's a pretty fun time.
Yeah. I don't understand why you're not writing these stories at this point. I don't know why there's not a motivation to write a class for a former fighter only motivated by their offspring.
That's what we got to do next is just make the good father class. It'll be a public service because apparently that's needed.
Instead of like tenacity or whatever that is, when you get to 0 hit points, it's like, my daughter, just that in quotes, and then just get up.
Yep. There are moments where like you give people temporary hit points, but it's not because of magic or anything. It's just because you have an emotionally vulnerable and available conversation with your offspring. You just sit down and speak to them for an hour about stuff that they need to talk about, and you listen to them, and that gives them temporary hit points in the next fight.
In social encounters, you say something kind of dated, and people are like, whoa, and then that's a distraction right there. That's your deception check with advantage.
That's the deception check. But because this is the good father, mm-hmm. you then also get like a buff when people tell you, hey, that was maybe off base, and you say, oh, sorry about that. I'll reevaluate where I'm at.
Oh my God. The redeeming quality of this class is really what's beautiful about it.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep. Yeah.
Sorry, I'll work on that.
Sorry, I'll improve. My apologies. And then they do, right? That's the kicker.
That's the kicker. That's the future
the
we want.
Has to improve. Yeah.
Where can they find you, Mason?
Listen, you can find me on TikTok. My handle is ProfessorD&D. You can also find the Professor's Comprehensive Collection of Character Classes on DM's Guild, sold for just under $10. You get 3 classes. It is basically the labor of a full calendar year of my life, and you get it for $10. Pressing on from that, you can also find me at MrMasonAllen.com. Again, that is MrMasonAllen, ALLAN.com. That's just kind of my general website. That doesn't have as much of the stuff about D&D stuff, though. I should probably fix that. But it does have a little bit about my book writing and also a little Q&A about myself that I hosted because I'm not that important. No one wants to ask me those questions yet. So...
It's all good. So we'll ask you the D&D stuff here.
Yeah. Listen, internet, that was not a cry for help. No one needs to ask me these questions. I already answered them. I already took care of it. No one needs to put in the labor. I did the job. It's done.
When you get famous, they're not even gonna have to do the BuzzFeeds, like rip off the question, like the Google's most question. It's the number one video.
It's right there.
Oh,
it's
I Googled right this. There. I know what this is.
Or is you doing it and then referring to that video and like going back and like giving the timestamps? I already answered this question.
Here it is. If you go to 1 minute and 30 seconds. Yeah.
I'm done. Yeah.
Anyway, that's where you can find me. That's it.
Well, thank you. Thank you, dear listener, for joining us on another episode of Dungeons and Degrees. You can find us on all social medias. Hang out. Talk to us. We'll talk back. We'll retweet shit. Like, we just want people to come join us and do the thing that we're doing. Like, share, subscribe, whatever it is. Give us 5 stars and only 5 stars because anything less is just a dick move because we're really not bad people. So 5 stars only. Otherwise, I don't know. You'll never get working downloading anything ever again. Nothing will ever download for you again. That's what'll happen. Nothing.
Alex has complete control of the internet.
Absolutely. They gave me that power. If, like Mason said earlier, you want to support Adrian on his funding for food and shelter and clothing, you are also more than welcome to help us out on our Patreon. You can help support us and get really fun content and really just be a really just generally awesome person. You can get in on our Patreon for as low as, I think, $3. Like, that's it. $3 a month. Please, you can give up one Starbucks run for your local D&D podcast.
Adrian.
Or you're for your local. Actually, think about that, right? You're going to go to Starbucks. Just skip maybe the pumpkin loaf and then send it to us through Patreon. And then you can be sending a pumpkin loaf to Adrian.
Adopt an Adrian.
For as low as $3 a month.
Listen, if two of y'all do it, I can get an 80 gram bag of rice. That'll slate the hunger.
What's the really big one? Listen. If you go up to the discipline, the $10 discipline, you get Adrian a bag of rice that will last for more than a week. Hopefully. Listen, I'm not here to judge.
For $30, I can get a 50-pound bag of rice.
Listen, that could be you.
I did that once.
Was it worth it?
Oh, it was. That rice lasted for so long, I did not have to buy rice for a very long time. That's what we call an investment.
That's what we call an investment, yes.
But feel free to join us on our Patreon. It's patreon.com/dungeonsndegrees.
All right. Thank you so much for listening. My name's Adrian.
And I'm Alex.
And I'm Mason.
Go have some fun.